I've got the tape recorder going. Like I said, my name's Kara Buick, and this is an interview with Dick Berry. It's August the 12th on a Thursday, 2004. So why don't we just start with where you were born, where you grew up?
I was born in Danville, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
It's a town of about 8,000 or 9,000. It's famous for the Geisinger Medical Center.
Okay.
They did have a state hospital there for mentally ill. And hold on a second, I got another call.
Okay.
That's an ex-Army nurse.
Oh.
So, and across the river from Danville was what made it well known is they had a Merck Sharp & Dohme drug company, which they still have.
Mm-hmm.
So the town now is probably closer to 15,000, 20,000.
Uh-huh. And is that near Pittsburgh, Philadelphia?
No,
what part of the state is that in?
It's between Harrisburg and Wilkes-Barre, and it's on the Susquehanna River.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the coal regions.
Uh-huh.
It used to be famous for coal all around there, but they don't do that much mining anymore.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But it was a great experience with, you know, public school where there were no discipline problems. Or people left their doors open at night. No crime.
Mm-hmm.
Just a small town. Everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, and quite different from my wife, who was born and raised in New York City.
I would imagine. And what year were you born?
I was born in 1940.
1940. Okay. Okay. And what did your parents do?
My mother was an aide at the state hospital, and eventually became an LPN at the state hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a plumber and got a job at the Merck Sharp & Dohme drug plant and became in management. So he worked his way up through the ranks.
Mm-hmm. And did you have brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers. My older brother, who's 2 years older than me, is a retired school teacher. Went to Bloomsburg State University and stayed pretty much in the area of Danville within 30 miles. Taught at a couple different schools and retired in Mifflintown, Pennsylvania. And my younger brother, George, is a retired Army nurse.
Oh, okay.
And he's married to a retired Army nurse.
So you could say this runs in your family.
And I got interested in nursing. I had a job at the Geisinger, and I pushed around a hospitality cart, which I sold magazines and candy bars and newspapers and things like that to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
Went room to room.
Mm-hmm.
And just really enjoyed the contact with the patients.
Uh-huh.
There was an opportunity in Philadelphia that was a school of nursing for men.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents encouraged me to apply there. I did and got accepted, so I went to the school in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And was this experience working in a hospital the first time you'd really been interested in medicine and in nursing?
Yes.
Mhm. Mhm. And so your parents were pretty supportive of this decision to go. Then they liked that idea.
Oh yeah.
Uh huh. Did you?
At that point, they really didn't have the money for college, so in the there was no tuition at the nursing school I went to.
Oh wow.
It was a 3-year diploma school.
Mhm. And there was no tuition.
No tuition. In fact, we got a stipend.
Mm-hmm.
We because they used us as staff on the wards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to help escort patients and vital signs and things like that. And so, and doing a lot of the nursing care, the beds and the baths and all that. So,
uh-huh.
Because I was married, I got $60 a month. And the ones that weren't married got $30 a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a free education, something I was interested in, and gave me a little bit of money.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And did you get married before you went to nursing school then, or at some point in Derry? Uh-huh.
I got married a few weeks before I went to nursing school, and I was going to go and then come home a couple weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down there just a few weeks and missed my wife and had her move down.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And
the school was, they took 15 students in every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So 30 a year.
Uh-huh.
The first year you were there, you got all your basic nursing classes and the microbiology and stuff like that. And then the second year, we did 9 months of med-surg and OB at the other portion of our hospital, which was the school I trained at was mainly psych.
Mm-hmm.
And the other hospital downtown at Pennsylvania Hospital was med surg and OB.
Mm-hmm.
And then for pediatrics, we did 3 months at St. Christopher's Hospital in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were expected to do the OB training just like everybody else. There was no issue with you being a man and just being OB.
No, we did, you know, we attended deliveries, we worked at newborn nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we did the same as the females.
Mm-hmm. And how many males were in your class?
15.
Oh, wow.
We started with 15. There were no females.
Oh, okay. So this was an all-male nursing school?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different.
The female portion of our class, which we didn't even consider our class, they went to the med-surg hospital downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hospital. It was there, right? It's right down near Independence Hall with Liberty Bell. It was founded by Ben Franklin.
Uh-huh.
It was one of the oldest hospitals in the country.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this was all men and your classes.
And then at the where we went to school, at the psych portion, we would get female nurses in from several hospitals in the area to do their rotation on psych.
Oh, okay.
They would come in for 12 weeks of psych.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they overlapped every 6 weeks. So.
Uh-huh. So when you decided to go to nursing school, did anybody, I mean, there weren't too many men in nursing at this point. Did you face any stigma, or did anybody, you know, question why you were going into nursing, or, you know, anything like that?
No, I think I had the advantage of, in my hometown, there were some male nurses that were in anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And were well thought of in the community, and I did go to an all-male school.
Mm-hmm.
So, stigma, maybe from, you know, people that you just meet offhand and you tell them what you are or what you do.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really have much trouble with it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. Because you kind of hear these horror stories sometimes of men who went into nursing and then people kind of question what they're doing and, you know, all of those kinds of things. Huh. So do you think your nursing school experience was different because it was an all-male nursing school, or did that shape your experience at all, do you think?
I think it did, because when I went back for my BSN, I was in the only male class, but this was all male. The curriculum was the same that the females had.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were kind of a work structure, and like when you're a senior student, you might have to work evenings and night shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd actually use it to work. And so we'd spend half the time in class and half the time on the ward.
Mm-hmm.
But we got the same basic training. And at diploma school, they taught you how to do a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
You know, you had to put down NG tubes and put in foleys. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of the BSN schools, you might be in your senior year before you finally get to do it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So I think there was an advantage, in a way, to go to the diploma school, because they kind of taught you how to do things, but not so much why you did them. You know, I don't think we did so much with understanding blood gases and the different electrolytes and chemistry lab slips,
mm-hmm.
that they teach the BSN,
mm-hmm.
but then that wasn't our job.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. And so what year was this? Was this 59, 60? You were in nursing school then?
I went to nursing school in 59.
Mm-hmm. 59. So it was a 3-year program, so then 62 you graduated?
Yeah.
Okay. And at what point did you decide to go into the Army Nurse Corps?
65.
And had you heard much about the Army Nurse Corps before that?
Yeah, we had some people that were in the student program.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the students sat there. But at the time I had a wife and 3 children. The oldest was 2.
Wow.
2-year-old, 1-year-old, and one that's just born.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in the military because I wanted to get my family out of Philadelphia. The money wasn't that great, but they did have health care for my family. I've been in the military since December of 57 in the reserves, so it wasn't completely new to me. I mean, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the choice to go in.
Mm-hmm. And so you joined the reserves then right out of high school?
I was still in high school.
You're still in high school, wow. And was that legal? I mean, were you old enough to join the reserves? How old did you have to be?
You join at 17 if your parents sign for you.
Oh, okay.
Today, you can join the Army if your parents sign for you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what made you decide to join the reserves at that point?
Well, it was something that almost, they had a unit right in my hometown, and it was something that a lot of my friends did, and so I joined.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the 6 months training when I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I came home and worked for a couple of months and applied for nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
And just waited till nursing school started.
Uh-huh. And so while you were in nursing school, did recruiters come to the school and try to kind of talk about the different nursing corps and the different branches and things like that? Do you remember?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. But you said there were already people in your program who were in the student nurse corps program.
Yeah, I had friends that were signed up, which is probably what I should have done. I really... because it would have given me more more active duty time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have gone in as a first lieutenant instead of a second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I lost 2 years there, and they paid pretty well for the students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that kind of the first time you had heard about the Nurse Corps program?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did I mean, was this something that the guys who were in the program talked a lot about, or was it just you sort of gathered information, you know, through osmosis, or you kind of by observation?
Well, I knew some of the guys that were going in, and I really, my goal was to get my family out of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I was already in the reserve. So I went down and talked to a recruiter. They didn't come and talk to me.
Uh-huh.
And, certainly didn't go in for the money.
Uh-huh.
Money was, I think at that point, a second lieutenant got $222 a month.
Uh-huh.
And I was making $360 a month at the hospital I was at.
Uh-huh. Wow. So you took a pay cut to get in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And was Philadelphia just not what you wanted? Did you have kind of a desire to travel, or was it just mainly to get out of Philadelphia?
Well, I just don't like big cities.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I like living near them, but not in them.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so you went and talked to the recruiter and said you wanted to join the nursing corps, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And did the recruiter, I guess they didn't really have to persuade you at that point. You'd kind of already been persuaded.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so you joined the Army Nurse Corps program, and then where did they send you first? Did you go to Fort Sam for your basic training?
I did.
Immediately? Okay.
I did. That was in the spring of 65.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the summer, I went to Valley Forge.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 weeks after I got to Valley Forge, they sent me to Vietnam.
Oh, wow, that was fast.
Yeah.
And did you think when you signed up for the Army Nurse Corps that that was a possibility?
You know, I really didn't know much about Vietnam when I signed up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went with an original unit, so, you know, it didn't dawn on me that I'd have to go to any war, because there wasn't anything going on when I went to basic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had advisors over there, but I didn't follow it very much.
Right. Right. And did the recruiter not mention that that was a possibility? Yeah, the one you talked to?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
May have, but then I would have said, well, you know, I'm still signing up. But, I mean, it wouldn't have stopped me from going in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what did you think when you got your orders then?
You know, why me? I got a wife and three kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I was settled into a nice house at Valley Forge, off base.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's sister was, this is my first wife now, this is not the wife I have now. Her sister lived in Philadelphia, so I knew she'd have, you know, someone to look in on her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, sure, I'll go. I didn't raise my hand to go, but when I didn't try to get out of it either. So.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Could you have gotten out because you had the babies and so many, you know, a newborn and that? Could you have gotten out, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I guess people can get out if they can find someone to switch with them. But I think it was put together so fast that, you know, they just said, you're going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could have gotten out of it or not.
Uh-huh. And had other people in your family served in the military before? Was that kind of a family tradition of being in the military or being in wars?
Yeah, my older brother was on a submarine for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And
my younger brother he hadn't done anything yet. He was still in high school.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And had your father served in the military?
My father served in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
World War II.
Uh-huh. And was that something that you kind of heard growing up, that, you know, the talk about military and about service and...
Oh, yeah.
And all of that? Was that... I mean, did you have kind of a sense of duty or patriotism or...
Oh, yeah.
Anything
absolutely.
Like that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, growing up, they used to have... in the 40s and 50s, but the movies, they always had a newsreel.
Uh-huh.
And they always showed clips of the war, World War II, and then Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think everyone in my hometown was had gone to World War II.
Mm-hmm.
People's parents.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you said there wasn't much talk about Vietnam at that point, about the war.
No, and not on the news either.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
If it was, it wasn't a big issue.
Right. Right. And you said you went with an original unit?
I did.
And that just means that you were a group when you left and you were sent all to the same place? Is that what you mean by that?
They gathered people from all over the United States, and we went to Fort Bliss, Texas,
mm-hmm.
where I'm at now. And we had a couple, first week we got all our shots and some classes. And the second week we had a few classes, and then the third week they said we don't have anything, so we're going to leave on the 15th of August. So, but we're not telling you where you're going.
Oh.
And so we were allowed to even go home for a week,
mm-hmm.
if we wanted to.
Uh huh.
So, and then we all left Fort Bliss here and went up to Oakland and got on a ship.
Uh-huh.
And spent 17 days crossing the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't even know that it was Vietnam at that point?
Well, we pretty much knew, yeah.
Okay, you had an idea, but they didn't spell it out for you.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So 17 days on a ship, what was that like?
We played pinochle all the time.
Uh-huh.
We had no duties.
Uh-huh.
The officers had rooms with one or two roommates. I don't know if you've ever been on a cruise ship or not, but
no.
Limited space.
Uh-huh.
But the food was great. And, you know, they had movies in the evenings. Like I said, we played pinochle the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was the percentage, or I guess, what were the numbers of male nurses that were sent?
Our unit had 60 nurses,
mm-hmm.
and 17 were male.
Wow.
We had no female enlisted.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So all the females were in the nurse corps.
Right.
And where were you, where did you get sent to once you got to Vietnam?
Quy Nhon.
Mm-hmm. And which hospital was that?
It was the 85th of VAC.
85th of VAC. Mm-hmm. And how large of a hospital was that?
I think we had set up 200 beds, but then we expanded because of all the malaria.
Mm-hmm.
Which were, you could take care of a lot of them, and they didn't need a lot of care, but they went back to duty, so.
Mm-hmm.
In a VAC hospital, most of the wounded stayed a couple days, and then we got them out.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But we did incur, we got a lot of the malaria.
Mm-hmm.
But Quy Nhon was, we took our hospital with us, all of the supplies and everything in the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we were there to support the 1st Cavalry Division and the 82nd Airborne and the 101st. So we got there before they did.
Okay.
So we set up and we watched them bring their stuff in,
mm-hmm.
by helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what month did you arrive?
We arrived in early part of September.
In 65.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And was there a lot of activity around Quy Nhon?
As far as fighting?
Mm-hmm. Or just anything. I mean, 200 beds and then you had to expand, sounds like a lot for a time when there weren't a lot of ground troops or anything yet at that point.
Oh, no, we didn't have much activity for the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't have much activity at all the first couple of weeks. But once, I think we started getting a lot of casualties at the end of September.
And were they brought in from all over the country or just from around your area?
Well, there was only one other hospital functioning at the time, and that was at Cameron Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the one down in Saigon, which was really far away from us. But yeah, we didn't get too many because first cab then came in and 101st, and we got real busy after September.
And
we didn't start getting the malarias until maybe November.
And what kind of wards did you have up and running at that point?
We had mostly surgical and orthopedic, and very few medical patients until we got the malaria. People were in pretty good shape physically.
Wow. And what was your duties at this hospital? Which wards did you work in?
I started out on the surgical ward. And pre-op, and then got so many malarias in that I wanted to work with them, so I went to the malaria wards for 2 months and then went back to the surgical ward.
So you sort of saw your way around the hospital.
The only place I didn't work was the intensive care unit and OR.
And what kinds of things did you do in the surgical ward?
Mainly gave out the medication. Everybody that was wounded got an IV of chloramycin and penicillin.
And then the pre-op was mainly getting people ready for surgery, I assume.
Well, they all got the same thing there, too. Sometimes pre-op was full, so they just put people on the ward. You can only do so many cases at a time. And there were times when we got in a lot of casualties where you'd actually have to triage and decide who was going to go first and so on. And I know we had a couple of head injuries die because we just didn't have we just didn't have the ORs and personnel or the time to do them. And we didn't have any other place that we could have backed them to. So yeah, they would do the chest and abdomens first. But that only happened like twice. The other times we got enough, we would get casualties enough that we could take care of. It's a lot like MASH, the choppers come in and don't have much notice, but then people just, the docs and anesthesia just run down and take care of them. We did work shifts on our wards, but if they got real busy, like a lot of choppers come in, everybody just went to work. So. For most people, probably.
And were these 8-hour or 12-hour shifts?
8-hour.
8-hour?
Yeah.
And generally 6 days a week, is that what you worked there as well?
Yeah.
Wow. And so did you have much time to yourself, or was it mainly work and then recovery from work?
We did have a decent amount of spare time. I was in a tent with 16 other guys. Physicians and nurses. but I mean, there were other units around us that would have, everybody had a movie at night.
We'd
find out who had what movie, and we'd go, sometimes we'd go to the movies, sometimes we'd play cards, sometimes we'd read. Sometimes we'd go out on the economy and eat.
Did you get to see a lot of Quinion then during your year?
Yeah.
And what did you think about it?
Well, it's a port city, but it's pretty small, you know, compared to Saigon. The people, the Vietnamese treated us well. We were only in danger for the first month or so we were there. And then the Koreans came in and set up a hospital about 12 miles from us. And the Koreans are very fierce fighters, so the Viet Cong did not bother with Quinion anymore.
And you say you were in danger once you, you know, when you first arrived. Was the hospital rocketed, perimeter infiltrated? I mean, what kinds of things?
We could hear mortar shells and small arms fire occasionally, you know, in the perimeter. And when we first got there, they took us like 10 miles from Quinion out in this big cow pasture, and we started to set up the hospital. And we were there about 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden they said we were moving. And we moved, and the next day they shelled the valley we were. So they had pre-warning from intelligence that the hospital was going to be mortared, and we got out of there.
And did you ever have to sort of stand guard at the hospital or
no.
While you were building or anything?
No.
And what was that like, putting the hospital together and getting everything ready? I mean, did you have to really construct the hospital and sort of construction work as well, as getting the equipment together?
For the ORs, they've used plywood and put an air conditioning in the back of it. You know, a big box for the ORs. Everything else was in tents. Tents that had, you could put about 25 beds in.
And these are, yeah. Tents, canvas tents, not like Quonset huts or anything like that.
Well, that was the thing. We started, after we moved into town, they would pour concrete for the floors, because we just had the dirt floors initially. And then every week or 2 weeks, they would build a Quonset and take the tent down. So from day one, everything got better. Every day, something better happened. You know, we started out with sea rations, which they don't even make anymore. And then we went on what we called, that was for about 6 weeks. Then we went on what we call B rations. B rations is when they use big cans of stuff and they cook it. And then you go through a chow line. Sea rations would just give you a box and you eat it on your own.
Right.
And then a couple months after that, we've got A rations, which is, you know, frozen food and vegetables, and, you know, stuff from the States. Where the local economy. So the food improves slowly. The living conditions slowly improve because the Quonset, some of them were air conditioned. The ICU was air conditioned, pre-op, and orthopedic wards were air conditioned. I mean, this took like 6 or 7 months till this happened, but it, you know, like I said, it improved a little bit.
Right. And what about your tent that you lived in with the 16 other guys? Was that, you know, canvas tents and eventually got better, or?
Never.
Never.
Yeah. I've worked a lot of night shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much impossible to sleep. But 10, it was like over 130 inside. Because it was 110, 120 outside.
Uh-huh.
And very humid.
Uh-huh.
So I would pee twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up in the morning and before I went to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
From habit, I guess.
Uh-huh.
It was just, I mean, it was hot.
Uh-huh. Wow. And so you worked a lot of nights. Did that help you to sleep better? Being more tired maybe in the day, or?
No, well, it was hotter during the day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I didn't get much sleep when I worked nights.
Uh-huh. And did you choose nights, or was it sort of rotated?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And which shift did you prefer?
Well, I would prefer the day shift.
Mm-hmm.
Evenings weren't too bad. Because we got off at 11, you still had, you could sleep well. So days and evenings, nights, it's just hard to sleep with being so hot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people, it doesn't bother them, but it did me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. Wow, and what was that like being away from home for that long and with the babies and all of that?
Well, the whole year seemed like 6 months. It went so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were so busy.
Uh-huh.
And I bought like 2 tape recorders and some tapes, and I sent 1 tape recorder to my wife, and we sent tapes back and forth, and the kids were on the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you have an R&R during the year?
I did have an R&R. I went with another male nurse to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Tokyo?
Well, I was very impressed with it when I first went there because the exchange rate was 400 yen to a dollar. So things were really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I was stationed in Japan for 3 years in the early 80s, and the exchange rate was 100 to a dollar.
So wow.
Quite a difference. But, you know, we enjoyed getting out getting different food and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Took a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Just to know we were off the island.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the island, but the southern island.
Mm-hmm.
And bought a lot of clothes. You know, you can get stuff tailor-made and all.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And, let's see, during your year, working and things, what kinds of things do you remember most about the year and working on the wards and with the patients?
Well, that's easy. That's the American GI.
Uh-huh.
The only person, the only GI I ever saw cry in Vietnam was a chaplain who was passing a kidney stone.
Mm-hmm.
The GIs themselves always worried about their buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could be a double amputee, and the first question they would ask is, how is it?
Yes, and she likes to let us know when the mail's coming, apparently. Sorry.
Well, I got 3 of them here, so if you can, I'll read your ears.
Hold on 1 second, sorry. Okay, so you said they always worried about their friends and...
Well, when can I get back to my unit?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. People that they're not exposed to combat cannot grasp what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are in the military, and they think they know it, but it's nothing like the guys that are putting their life on the line.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely amazing.
Uh-huh.
I wonder where these people come from.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty young in Vietnam, too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you were a little bit older than these guys?
25.
Hmm. And so did you try to spend a lot of time on the wards, you know, in your spare time, or you know, did you get to talk to many of the GIs?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the things that was different with the nursing than what we do now is we did not do much documentation.
Mm-hmm.
We used the old Cardex system. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But we transferred everybody's orders onto a Cardex, and we wrote there was a place to check off meds and a place to write nurses' notes and
mm-hmm.
a place to write doctor's orders.
Uh-huh.
And so we didn't have, you know, tons of paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
If you gave somebody something to pain, you recorded it, but you didn't go back and record the results, you know, an hour later. Or had relief. I mean, it's just, we just didn't have time. We took a lot of shortcuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we were in a back hospital, and the main thing was stop the bleeding, get them pain, get them started on antibiotics, and then they were going to get them out.
Uh-huh.
They mm-hmm. did what they called, they debrided all the wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they left them home.
Uh-huh. And that's because of infection, right?
Yeah. And then they would send them out to, like, Hawaii or the Philippines or to the West Coast. And then at those hospitals, they did what we called a DPC, a delayed primary closure.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd get them, they'd open the dressings, take them to the OR, scrape the wounds, and then sew them up.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't close them up in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of amputees after Korea were because they did close the wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got overwhelming infections. So.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, during Vietnam, we still didn't have the broad spectrum antibiotics that we have now.
Uh-huh.
We had penicillin, chloromycin, and streptomycin.
Mm-hmm.
That was
wow.
it.
Wow.
We didn't have all the butterfly start IVs. We had 18-gauge needles.
Mm-hmm.
It came in a pack, in a box.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, things were quite different. And like I said, we took, paper-wise, we took a lot of shortcuts. We didn't have a unit dose for medication.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd never survive with the way nurses have to do now if we had to do that back then.
Uh-huh. Just a lot more paperwork and record-keeping now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And paperwork was the least of our problems. The
uh-huh.
main thing was the note that the doctor in Vietnam wrote to the doctor that was going to get it. It's safe.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And did the patients come straight from the field to the evacuation hospital, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of them came in by helicopter.
Uh-huh.
And some of the lesser ones came in by ground.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And how were relationships between you know, the nurses and the doctors? Did everybody work well together? Were there any kind of morale or discipline issues or any problems?
I think overall everything went well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were kind of a family for 17 days coming over on the ship.
Uh-huh.
You know, the officers ate in a separate area from the enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to know. Well, and then we had the 4 weeks before we came.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew people pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
and we all left together and arrived together. So it wasn't like, well, we'll send some of them and the rest of the unit will come later. We all went as a unit. So we got to know people pretty good, and I don't think we really had any, maybe one or two prima donnas, but we didn't really have, I mean, everybody was there for the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd have to say that they got along pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's discipline, I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
Some of the universities might have got drunk or something.
Uh-huh.
Nothing big.
Uh-huh. And was that something that was pretty common, was drinking, in off hours?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It was the thing to do.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Vietnamese beer was 35 cents, and it was like a quart and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and... Yeah, people, that's what they do. They just go out and drink beer.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a problem? Like, it wasn't, something to be concerned about? It's just kind of pass the time or coping or...
Yeah, I don't think it was a problem. I mean, there were some people that got pretty shit-faced every once in a while, but it wasn't a problem at work.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Some of them, just drank for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what their buddies did.
Uh-huh.
They were expected to get snorkers again.
Uh-huh.
But, no, we had one doctor in our tent that drank way too much.
Mm-hmm.
He would buy liquor by the case.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know that it was any problem on duty.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And who would have had to take care of that, if it was a problem? Would it have been the chief nurse or maybe the XO? Or?
Well, each section had a chief, chief of medicine, chief of surgery,
mm-hmm.
chief of orthopedics, so whoever's service was under.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a second, I got my call.
Okay.
Doc, when I talk to you, then I'll call back. Oh, hold on, I got another one.
Okay.
This is my wife.
And so, let's see, you said you all arrived together and then you all left together, so you didn't have
no,
that.
No, we didn't all leave together.
Oh, okay.
Some of the doctors only had like 4 or 5 months left on active duty, and so when their time was up, they went back.
Mm-hmm.
Got replacements in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the nurses left early.
Uh-huh.
I think it was just the physicians.
Mm-hmm. And who did the male nurses, in your spare time, did you hang out more with the doctors or with the female nurses or maybe with the corpsmen? I guess how did kind of social groups form or...
Well, when we first got there, remember I told you we were out in this valley?
Mm-hmm.
The female nurses stayed in town.
Uh-huh.
At what was made into the officers' club. It was the compound.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't join us out in the valley until like 3 weeks later, and then a couple days after that, we had to move back in town.
Uh-huh.
And they had their own latrine and tent,
uh-huh.
a couple tents, and we worked out a thing with showers after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But socially, I think it was pretty much guys and guys and girls and girls.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I don't remember any girls being in our tent.
Uh-huh.
And I don't uh-huh. remember any guys going in the female tent. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's showers were set up so that there were certain hours that the ladies used them and certain hours in the year.
Uh-huh.
Initially, our showers were they would truck us out to a creek, and they set some things in the water that pumped the water up and then came down on top of you. It was muddy water, but it was fine.
Uh-huh.
And then we had to build us a shower point, which we called a 30-60. They would turn the water, you'd stand under, each person would stand under a pipe, you know, there were like 16 of them, and they'd turn it on for 30 seconds, and then you would lather up, and then they turn it on for 60 seconds to rinse you. And that was it. And then we got regular showers where they ran all the time,
mm-hmm.
with hot water.
And clear water, not muddy water.
Yeah.
Wow. See, it sounds like your living conditions and things were, you know, quite primitive compared to what a lot of the medical staff had, you know, throughout the war. I mean, it seems like things, I don't recall hearing stories of baths and creeks, you know, before.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like Iraq now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son was over there with an original unit, you know, in the desert where they were in tents or just out in the open.
Uh-huh.
Now they've got little houses and trailers for the guys to sleep in.
Uh-huh.
He's with a hospital unit, too, so.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was, yeah, it was primitive. The first night that we were there, they did set up tents, but it poured down rain, and the water ran through our tent. And I looked over across the tent, and I saw one of the doctors, and he had his head on a towel. We didn't even have cots.
Mm-hmm.
And he took the towel that he was using for a pillow and rang it out, and then laid his head back down on it. And I said, well, if the docs have to put up with this, I guess I can. That was our first night there.
Uh-huh.
The girls were in town in a villa.
Uh-huh. Why were they separate? What was the reasoning there?
Well, some of the doctors said because they were special, but I think it was just that we weren't set up. And it was just better for them to stay in town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And we didn't really need them as far as, because we weren't going to be operational.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was just a matter of housing them and pretty much getting them out of the way until the hospital was set up.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't much they could do until the structures were put up, and then they could come in and help when things were unloaded, put things away.
Uh-huh. But were you expected to help set the structures up? I mean, were the male nurses sort of there to help with the building?
Oh, well, I think we unloaded stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think, no, the tents were, they were put up by an advance party.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. Wow, and so you were at this hospital for your entire year?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And did it get progressively busier, you know, as the year went on?
No.
No?
Hmm. No. The last 3 months I was there, the 67th back came in, and their hospital wasn't built. They were going to build a permanent structure on the airstrip in Quinion.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a place to work. So they came and worked with us, so we had an overlap.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
So we actually had more nurses than we needed at the end.
Uh-huh.
I would not say that we were understaffed. Well, I guess we would if you were going to work 8 hours a day and people wouldn't help out when you got busy, but it wasn't a problem. I think everybody just pitched in.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. And so you came back home then in September of 66?
August of 66.
August 66, okay. And where did you come through on your way home? I mean, did they send everyone home on a plane and not a boat this time?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They flew us into Travis Air Force Base, and I was assigned to Fort Monmouth, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. And was that close to where your wife was?
Yeah, she was at Valley Forge.
Uh-huh. And so did you have to then move your family, or was it?
I did a couple weeks later, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. And what was coming home like? What was that experience like?
Well, I can remember my oldest, my two daughters looking at me real strange, like, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they were one and a couple months when I went.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you just sort of pick up where you left off, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the tapes helped.
Uh-huh.
And we were able to write quite a bit. I mean, we were able to send mail free.
Uh-huh.
From Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually making a lot more money than I thought, because I got promoted over there. We got pay raises, and we got combat pay and separation pay, and I was sending money home.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to my check, so.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so what was your new assignment like? What kinds of things did you do at this hospital?
I worked on the surgical ward.
Mm-hmm. And were you treating a lot of people returning from Vietnam yet, or was it mainly families and things of people on the base?
At Fort Monmouth, it was mostly people on base.
Mm-hmm.
the hospitals that got the ones from Vietnam were the medical centers.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii got a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, well, the 25th Division was over there, and they took a lot of casualties. And the 25th Division was from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But San Francisco had a hospital, and Presidio. And Bliss had a medical center. Brooke got a lot of burn patients,
mm-hmm.
you know, at Fort Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't trickle down to the smaller hospitals unless somebody was going to require a lot of other surgeries, like skin grafts, something that could be done and to put them close to home.
Mm-hmm.
But if it couldn't be done there, they wouldn't send them there.
Uh-huh.
Depending on what, I mean, if they had the... If they had a fractured femur and they just had to recover, they might send them near their home.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. And did you stay in the same type of nursing?
I did.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned earlier that you went back for your BSN. Was this after you came back from Vietnam then?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. What point was that, or what year was that?
When I came back from Vietnam, I went to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fort Monmouth, I went to Hawaii, and I worked on orthopedics there, and there we had a lot of patients from Vietnam. And then from Hawaii, I went to recruiting.
Uh-huh.
From recruiting, I was tops in the nation both years. Said, you can go wherever you want, you can do whatever you want to do, what do you want? I said, I want to get my BSN, so they sent me to school for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Paid for everything.
Mm-hmm. What was Tripler like? Being in Hawaii, was that? I mean, was that what I would think it would be, living in Hawaii, or was that a good assignment?
Yeah, the first time.
Uh-huh.
But I've had two tours since, and I hated it there.
Oh, really?
It's a great place to go once.
Uh-huh.
It's a horrible place to live. It really is. The traffic, it's expensive. I mean, there's just nothing good I can say about it. I have a lot of good friends over there.
Uh-huh.
And now we meet them in Vegas all the time. So.
Uh-huh.
But it was, we got a lot of people that were from the 25th. And they had to have, some of the people were in the hospital the whole 3 years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to have different stages of surgery.
Uh-huh. And were their families able to come and visit them there at different points, or were they just sort of out there?
The only thing they wouldn't do, and they put them out on convalescent leave if they lived in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't live in Hawaii, say they lived in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
they would not send them on convalescent leave.
Uh-huh.
Because they wouldn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
They would just sign in to another facility, and then they were, technically, they were not AWOL.
Uh-huh.
So they wouldn't come back.
Uh-huh. Huh.
So they wouldn't let anybody go on convalescent leave that lived on what we call the mainland of the United States.
Uh-huh.
But if you lived on the island, you could get some surgery done and go on convalescent leave for a month and come back and get some more surgery. And, you know, there were a lot of people that were, maybe had 30 or 40 surgeries.
Wow.
You know, that needed a lot of grafts and stuff.
Mm-hmm. 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 And did you like the work? Did you like working with those patients, or?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not so much the ones in Hawaii, though, because some of them got to be disciplinary problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. So just, you know, were they bringing the drugs back from Vietnam, or were they were they kind of coming back home addicted? Was that the problem?
I don't know. They were getting it from somewhere. I imagine the families.
Uh-huh.
There on the island.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of them got busted and fined and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And why do you think they were... The problem existed like that?
Well, I think a lot of it might have just been boredom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think some of them, if they could have gone convalescent leave and come back, that would have been part of it. Some of them had some pretty frightening experiences in Vietnam, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't dawn on them probably until they got back.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, when they were over there, they always worried about their buddy.
Uh-huh.
And always wanted to get back to their unit.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Hmm. So you were in Hawaii for 3 years, and then you were assigned to recruiting?
Right.
Is that right? And was that an assignment that you requested, or did they come to you and ask you if it was something you wanted to do, or?
They came and asked me.
Uh-huh. And what did you think about that assignment?
Let's see, I was supposed to leave, I was supposed to be in Hawaii for 36 months.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have got me out in September, and my kids would have missed the first couple weeks of school.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them, if you can get me out of here in July,
uh-huh.
instead of September,
uh-huh.
I'll do it. And they did it.
Uh-huh.
So I only did 34 months in Hawaii instead of 36.
Mm-hmm. And where were you sent to then? Where were you based?
I was sent to Richmond, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the east, the southern east coast. I didn't have Georgia and Florida, and I didn't have above D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I had North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and part of Ohio and Indiana.
That's a large area.
Yeah. But we're at that time, we're only working college BSN schools.
Oh, okay, so they'd stopped recruiting at diploma schools at that
right.
point. Huh. And so you were recruiting for the Army Nurse Corps.
Right.
But, okay. This is one of the things that I'm interested in is recruiting. if you could talk as much as possible about this.
You need to have a conversation with my wife.
Uh-huh. Does she do recruiting too?
She did.
She did during the Vietnam era?
No.
Okay. After that?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was the best they had too.
Uh-huh.
She even became a commander.
Uh-huh.
Which is unusual for a nurse.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Huh. The program I had to sell was so great that it wasn't hard to sell.
Uh-huh.
At that time, we offered almost for the last 2 years of school,
mm-hmm.
we offered them almost $500 a month
mm-hmm.
and paid for their books.
Uh-huh.
And then they would go in as a first lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
And we had some, actually the other students pretty much sold it for us.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Virginia in Charlottesville always had people in the student nurse program. And they were riding around in nice cars and all. And you'd say, where do you get your money from? And they said, oh, I'm in the student nurse program. And so the last 6 months I was in recruiting, they shut it down. We weren't taking anybody.
Uh-huh. Why was that?
Because Vietnam was over.
Okay, so just the end of the war.
Yeah,
okay.
We already had committed for the next 2 years with, bringing a lot of nurses in. We're sufficient enough nurses. Bring in.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't out actively recruiting.
Uh-huh.
Because we would have been way over the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the last 6 months, I had been going part-time to school in the evenings to get my BSN. And my commander said, well, why don't you take this course that you need? And it was during the day. Take it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to school during the day, 2 days a week. And then the rest of my time I just maintained PR with all the deans of the schools and the students that we had in the program. In other words, we just went around and made contact, remained friends with everybody, but we weren't really actively recruiting.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Hmm.
And let's see, so you traveled around to, did you go mainly to large universities? Did you go to small universities? Did they kind of figure out that you needed to go to certain parts of the country or, I guess, more apt to join up than others? Or, I guess, what were kind of your tactics? Or
well, I had an NCO
mm-hmm.
in some of the bigger places. I had one in West Virginia. I had one in Louisville, and I had one in Norfolk,
mm-hmm.
and one with me in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked the schools, and then I would go out and talk to them, and they worked the applications and stuff. It got to the point where if depended on the school. They got into this minority thing.
Uh-huh.
Which you could get into the nursing corps. I mean, this is a fact. Bigoted or anything. But you had to put a statement on the cover sheet that this person is a member of such and such minority.
Uh-huh.
And you could get them accepted with a 2.0 average from an average school or a poor school, and people with a 3.5 from University of Virginia they weren't going to take.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the handwriting was on the wall that we had to get. The RAIN program was shutting down at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But for the last year and a half of RAIN, they did the same thing. They took a large number of minorities in as RAIN students and turned down a lot of others.
Uh-huh. And was it just a race issue? Was it, you know, they're trying to get more African-Americans? Was that the issue?
That was the issue.
Okay. Were there other groups that they were trying to get as well?
Well, if you were American Indian or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. Huh.
I mean, you know, it's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying anything bad about minorities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Army was trying to get more minorities in, basically.
Yeah, they would never admit that, but yeah.
Uh-huh, okay. Not a spelled out policy, maybe.
Yeah.
Not written down, but... Okay. Okay, and so what kinds of things would you do? Did you have an office in Richmond that you sort of maintained? And then, and what did you do in that office? Was it sort of a place where people could come visit, or was it mainly just, you getting your work done?
Me getting my work done, because it was on an Army depot.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't in Richmond, it was actually in Chesterfield,
uh-huh.
which is a suburb, and it would have been very hard for anyone to get there, so it would be better for us to just say, we'll meet you somewhere.
Okay. Uh-huh. And so what would you do on your recruiting trips? You know, say you were going to University of Virginia or somewhere, what would you do when you visited?
Occasionally we would have time set up with a group of students who
mm-hmm.
would kind of give a lecture,
mm-hmm.
tell them about the Army Nurse Corps, I would tell them about my experiences and then the program.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, if we got someone that wanted to meet just like one-on-one
mm-hmm.
to discuss the program, we'd go maybe to Pizza Hut or something like that
mm-hmm.
and talk to them.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of things did you tell them in your speech or in one-on-one meetings?
Mainly about the program.
Mm-hmm. Just sort of the financial benefits and
yeah.
and that sort of thing. Hmm. What kinds of questions did they ask usually? What kinds of questions from the audience, or what were some of the main concerns of people who are interested?
Well, of course, Vietnam was over. So, we get, some people would ask, well, if Vietnam starts up again or they start somewhere else, would I be sent overseas? And I'd say, you could be.
Mm-hmm.
I never lied to any student.
Uh-huh.
Because we didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had enough in the program that we could turn people down.
Mm-hmm.
But that was their main... And someone would ask, what would I be doing on the war?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you're going in as a lieutenant, you're going to work a lot of evenings, you're going to work a lot of nights, and you're going to work some weekends, unless you get a job in the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was truthful with it, and I think that's one of the reasons I was successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell, oh, no, you won't have to. Or you won't have to work Christmas Day. Because it's not realistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what years were you in recruiting?
I was in recruiting 71 through 73.
Okay. Hmm. And did you have your brochures or pamphlets or videos?
Yeah.
Do you remember any of those? Do you remember any that you used?
Number and all?
No, just what, you know, what they, the pictures that were in them, or what they said, or.
A lot of them were geared towards travel, Hawaii and Germany, and you know, mostly overseas places.
Uh-huh.
And some were geared towards the program itself, you know, on.
Okay.
So, the brochures. Yeah, they, a lot of them didn't feature male nurses.
Uh-huh.
Mostly female nurses. And they'd show some of them would show pictures of, you know, from actually working on a ward. There were some that were geared towards the different specialty schoolings that the Army has, like, you know, the OR or anesthesia, or I'm not sure if we had a course for ICU. I don't think we did. You know, we've got a lot of courses now where
mm-hmm.
But we did have OR and community health.
Mm-hmm.
And these weren't guaranteed. These were just available. Things that you could do.
And you mentioned that a lot of these brochures didn't have pictures of male nurses. Was that something that you found offensive, or?
No. I think when I was in the, the percentage of men was maybe 6 or 8%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Much higher now.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was never offended by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you, did you sort of get directions from, you know, someone higher, or someone, you know, from D.C. or from the recruiting command that said, you know, we want you to do these things, or were you just sort of said go recruit and left up to yourself how to do that, or, you know what I mean? I guess they give you sort of instructions on where to go and what to do, or did you just sort of feel it out yourself?
What they did is they gave you an objective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For every 3 months, or your total for the year.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't care where you got them or how you got them.
Uh-huh.
No, I mean, I suppose someone that was in trouble making their numbers, they may have gotten more guidance from D.C., but I was not in a situation where I was worried about my numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I had some real good NCOs
mm-hmm.
that had been in the program long before I got there and were still there when I left.
Mm-hmm.
Recruiters, especially enlisted, if they do a good job, they can homestead for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I didn't get much guidance.
Uh-huh. Did they just sort of send you packets of brochures or things to use, and then, I mean, is that how you got your brochures and pamphlets?
Yeah, we got them from, I'm not sure it was D.C., but some printing. I mean,
uh-huh.
all the, what it would do, it would come into the called RMS, or the main recruiting station,
mm-hmm.
Where you had recruiters of all types, and part of that would be a nurse, because not every recruiting station has a nurse. Now they're probably even fewer than when I was on. So if you had a counselor there, you would get those brochures from wherever they sent them from.
Uh-huh.
And then it was up to us to get it down to the local recruiting office.
Okay. Did you ever have to make up your own information or pamphlets or anything?
I did not.
So what they gave you was sufficient, basically. Okay. And you said they gave you objective numbers that you had to meet. And do you remember any of those numbers?
I think the first year I was supposed to make either 8 or 12. I made 19. The second year, maybe the first year I had 12, and the second year they cut it down to 8, and then they changed it. You know, I told you they just they cut us off.
Mm-hmm.
So I had made my 8 before they cut us off. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did you get most of the people who signed up? Where did they come from? I mean, what regions or what areas or schools?
My biggest schools was, of course, University of Virginia. I used to call Little Walter Reed because it had almost a lot of students like the RAIN program.
Mm-hmm.
Another good school was University of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Old Dominion down near Norfolk.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get people out of these two-year colleges that were kind of preps for University of Virginia or Old Dominion or another school.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia had a lot of these schools. Not a lot. They had three good ones. They had one in Harrisonburg and one in Fredericksburg, another one in Farmville.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go to these were people that were taking their first 2 years of not necessarily nursing, but the general stuff that
uh-huh.
you need for a degree in almost anything.
Uh-huh.
And then towards the end of their second year, they were leaning towards nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they got accepted at a college for nursing, we could put them in the nurse program.
Uh-huh.
Once they started at the university. So we could work them up and then have them ready to go.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, did you find that, was there a class difference? I mean, did you find more students who were signed up that were sort of middle class or lower middle class as opposed to upper middle class? Or, I mean, was the money a big drawing factor, you think, to get people in?
I think it was, yeah.
Uh-huh. Kind of having to pay for the program was going to be a big issue. Hmm. And did you find, I grew up in West Virginia, that's where I'm from.
Oh, really?
I'm right outside of Huntington, little small town. And then I went to Marshall for my undergrad, and, you know, lived there for a while. So I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, now it seems like, and even during the Vietnam War with a lot of the GIs, came from, you know, smaller regions or poor families who didn't have a lot of other opportunities, and so the military is kind of one way out. And I'm just wondering if the same thing kind of applied with nurses as well. You know, if it was maybe more beneficial to go to a place like Kentucky or West Virginia and not necessarily to go to D.C. where maybe your parents made more money or you had more opportunities. Did you find that to be the case at all?
Well, most of the people I got was from Virginia, West Virginia, and Kentucky, and a lot of them were, like, I'd say, middle class.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did they come from military families as well?
Some did, yeah.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Some did.
Did you ever have to deal with their parents? Did you ever get worried parents that didn't want their daughter signing up for the military or something like that?
No, I did deal with one parent, and I'll tell you about it in a minute. I need to take a second to go to the bathroom.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
I'm on LASIK. It's still late morning here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I I have a real good friend in Huntington, Phil Pappas. You may know him.
I knew A. Pappas. I went to school with a girl. His last name was Pappas, but I'm not. They're from sort of. I'm not sure if you know where it is. Pritchard. kind of out past Canova and Cerrito and.
I don't know. I played golf there one day. I went to nursing school. And he went into anesthesia. He's probably retired now. Because he was a lot older than me.
Did you get, you mentioned you got some people who signed up from West Virginia?
The first year I did, yeah.
What part of the state did they come from?
Around Beckley.
And what was the school down there, do you remember?
I'm thinking they went to school in Kentucky. Like Spalding or... Spalding's in Indiana. I'm not sure that there was a particular school in West Virginia. Because I didn't have that my second year. They redrew the line. And I didn't have Ohio, Indiana, and West Virginia the second year.
And you said you had to deal with one one parent that was kind of not not too happy about their daughter signing up.
Yes. His name was General Henyon. His daughter, he was the commanding general of recruiting. His daughter was dating a guy at the University of Virginia that was going into the Marine Corps. So his daughter wanted to sign up to the Army student, or the Navy student. And we got not a direct order, but we got the message that, how's it going to look, me being the commanding general of Army recruiting and my daughter signs up for the Navy? So we worked on Nancy a lot. But anyway, she took the physical and applied to the Navy. And we said, well, just in case the Navy doesn't take you, you've already done the physical, why don't you apply for the Army too? And we'll just hold your papers back until you make up your mind. Or to see if you get accepted by the Navy. So she agreed, and the Navy had a deadline every 6 months or so where you could put in applications or you couldn't. And the Army didn't. And somehow, when it came time for Navy to put in her packet, her physical disappeared.
Do you think that was an accident, or?
We found it at AP's. It was misfiled. But we had made a copy of it before it got misfiled. So Nancy joined the Army Navy.
Wow.
She was a hard sell because she was going to be Marine, and she was afraid that she'd have a better chance of being signed. Well, anyway, they broke up.
So in the end, it didn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. What kinds of things did you look for in a candidate?
Mainly their grades and their physical was a big thing. I mean, we wouldn't even process them. But we could process them, but we wouldn't put the packet in if they were overweight. And a lot of people were. A lot of people are now. I mean, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah. do you think the requirement for weight was a fair one then? I mean, was it? I mean, if you didn't meet the weight requirement, were you pretty overweight? I mean.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
We had one girl that was a couple pounds underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And we took her to AP's to get weighed one day, and she couldn't. She was still a pound under.
Mm-hmm.
So we took her out, got her a bunch of bananas and ice cream, and took her back and weighed her. She made her. But she really wanted to get in, and she was a real, real strong student. So.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Oh, during, I guess during the main years of the war, would they sort of have overlooked things like being overweight or?
No. Yeah, they did overlook it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then once it started to wind down and you couldn't get the numbers elsewhere, it started to be enforced again, is that?
Well, it's pretty much enforced now.
Uh-huh.
Sure is.
Mm-hmm.
And, for even many, I'd say even several years after Vietnam, that they weren't strict on the weights. But they are now. I mean, you used to see a lot of fat doctors,
mm-hmm.
and fat nurses. They don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't stay around.
Uh-huh. And did you recruit, or were your numbers, did you find that you were getting mostly females? Did you get any male nurses signing up?
I got two males.
Mm-hmm. And
but there weren't that many males that were going to school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you ever have to go on, like, local TV, or did you ever do radio programs? Uh-huh. And what was that like?
It was just the moderator just asked a few questions and we would answer the questions. And he'd let us briefly describe our program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was usually like 6 a.m. in the morning and nobody watching. Yeah, we did that a couple of times.
Did you go other places? Was it mostly school visits? Did you have... I've seen pictures of like a display stand that some people used that had like a life-size cutout of a nurse and that sort of thing. Did you ever use anything like that or go anywhere besides the schools?
Oh yeah, we went to all the conventions.
Uh-huh.
You know, most states have a nursing convention.
Uh-huh.
In the fall, usually September, October.
Mm-hmm.
And we always went to those.
Uh-huh.
And we would get a hospitality room, and we'd have all the brochures and the things you're talking about, and then we would serve refreshments there.
Mm-hmm.
We'd get people to come in and talk to us about it.
Uh-huh.
Well, a lot of people were, like I remember the one we did in West Virginia. It wasn't in Beckley, it was Clarksville or Charleston?
Uh-huh, Charleston's the capital.
Yeah, it was in Charleston.
Uh-huh.
And we got one of the hotels there and had a hospitality suite, and we went to the local Coca-Cola person and said, do you want us to serve free Cokes at our hospitality? And they, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
You know, they just give you the cups with Coca-Cola on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dunkin' Donuts would always, donate stuff. That's the best advertising you can get.
Uh-huh.
For selling a product is to get something free.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd be available for, we'd stay up till like midnight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to, did you ever find opposition at any of these nursing conventions? Were you ever... Did you ever feel like they didn't want you there?
No.
What about opposition to the war? Was that an issue? You know, once the anti-war movement really got going, was that a problem for recruiters having to deal with that or answer questions?
Not for nurses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was for the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
because we don't draft nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
other people get drafted. Everybody
right.
else gets drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the biggest part of the protest, was people getting drafted, and I don't blame them in a way.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't draft nurses, so no, I didn't have any opposition to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Air Force would be there, and the Navy, and you know, they'd have booths or hospitality rooms and stuff, too.
Uh-huh.
But we were good friends with that, so.
Uh-huh. So not too much competition with the other branches, or?
Not really, and sometimes we'd share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd say, well, this girl definitely doesn't want to go in the Army, but she is interested in being a flight nurse, and we couldn't give the name to her.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did you ever arrange trips? I've read that some places they would arrange trips for interested people to go visit an Army hospital or visit an Army post so they could see what military life is like.
We did.
Uh-huh. And what kinds of things did you do on those trips, or how did you arrange that?
We just, you get permission, of course, from the facility and say, is there what areas are we not allowed to go in?
Mm-hmm.
And usually we were just allowed to go in every place else and take a look.
Uh-huh.
And let them, usually take them to eat in the eating facility at the hospital and let them talk to some of the nurses that work there.
Mm-hmm. Was it, what was one instance of arranging this trip? Where did you get the nursing students from?
University of Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And we got some from, and we went to, down to Fort Knox.
Mm-hmm.
And we got nurses from Old Dominion and Hampton Institute, took them to Fort Eustis.
Uh-huh. And was it an overnight trip, or was it just
no,
a...
No, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, we'd probably only be at the facility about 3 or 4 hours.
Uh-huh. And was it, kind of carefully planned out, or was it just sort of a field trip, and then what happened, or, who they ran into, or did you kind of arrange meetings with nurses or people on base?
Well, we would talk to the chief nurse, and we would tell them that we were coming at a certain time,
mm-hmm.
and our plan was to, let them have her nurses be candid with them if they asked questions. And, we told them we're going to eat at such and such a time. And then and some of the nurses did come down and actually talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But we always, first thing we do would be to introduce them to the chief nurse. We didn't really care about the commander or the doctor. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if they ran into them in portable school,
mm-hmm.
that was fine, but that wasn't. That's more structured as us showing up.
Uh-huh.
And nurses would be available if they want.
Right. I've read, I've been to the Army Nurse Corps archives in Falls Church, and I've found records of, there was one trip they took nurses on an overnight trip, and they actually put them on a plane and sent them somewhere, and there was all of this concern that the nurses or the people interested would meet officer men and that they would sort of get to hang out and meet these eligible bachelors. And it all seemed kind of choreographed, or they wanted to make sure that they could meet potential dates or something.
Yeah.
It sounded kind of funny to me. But that one seemed kind of like a an overnight trip and a long visit and that sort of thing.
Well, that might have been from one of those areas that have trouble making their numbers.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have to resort to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I just wondered, on that trip, if they'd had a male nurse, if they would have had, pretty girls around for him to meet, or,
Uh-huh. Well, with me, you got what you got.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you said you went to Hampton Institute as well?
Yeah.
And that's African-American? Right.
Pretty much.
I'm thinking of the right place, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And did you have to deal with different issues there than you did, say, at University of Virginia, or answer different questions? Were there different concerns? Or was it all pretty much the same?
It was all pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You weren't ever given specific numbers. You know, you have to have this many white nurses and this many African-American nurses.
No.
Uh-huh.
No. Hmm. I mean, you could read between the lines what they wanted, but
mm-hmm.
no, I was not. Like I said, that happened the first 6 months of my second year.
Mm-hmm.
So we only did it for that 6 month period.
Uh-huh. And you said you could read between the lines.
Yeah.
How did you get that idea? Like, what did they say that made you think, I need to get more minorities?
Well, we'd get it from our commanders,
mm-hmm.
but not from Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it didn't come from the Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
It did come from there, but nobody knew where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was it in, like, memorandum or just conversations or?
Memorandum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was vague, you know. You must, on the cover sheet, we had a cover sheet that went on the packet that we sent.
Mm-hmm.
And it would give the person's name and, the university they're going to, and what they were applying for, and then they sent a memorandum out that when you give their name, you say is a member of such and such a minority.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Hmm.
And they can dodge that. They can just say, well, we're just doing a survey. We want to know how many applied
mm-hmm.
from different races.
Uh-huh.
Not that it means anything. I mean, there's always ways of getting out of things.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
But it was, you know, that was a big thing on affirmative action. Those words weren't used, but we knew what they were.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
They used to take people application of people out of range and submit minorities in their place.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew what was going on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. And so going to Hampton or, you know, places like that was one way to kind of boost those numbers or, you know, or try to get more minority applicants, I guess.
If they wanted to apply, yeah.
Right. Did you find that you were successful at a place like Hampton? I mean, were people generally interested when you went there?
Some weren't. I mean, some worried more about leaving their family than anything else.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they just couldn't. And that's a good possibility, that you're going to be sent, you know, somewhere where you don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, to submit a packet and say someone says, I want to come in, but I only want to be going to Hawaii. I couldn't guarantee that.
Right. Right.
I don't make assignments.
Mm-hmm.
I only submit a packet so that you can get accepted.
Uh-huh.
The program. I have nothing to do with that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Now, you can do that with, if you're already an RN.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a recruiter.
Uh-huh.
You can do that.
Then you got your first choice if you were already an RN.
Yeah.
Oh, huh. But not if you were in the student nurse corps program.
Right.
Do you think a lot of people misunderstood that in the student nurse corps program?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
None of mine did.
Uh-huh.
I told them.
Yeah. Hmm. And by the time that you were in recruiting, you know, in 71, did anybody that you signed up for the, well, I guess 2 years later, that nobody would have gone to Vietnam?
No.
No? Okay. Huh. But in 71, was that a concern, that they might get sent to Vietnam?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. But I didn't tell you, for, to me, you know, I spent almost 30 years in the Army, almost 31 years in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And without a doubt, Vietnam was the most rewarding year of my career.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And what made it rewarding, you think?
Just that you knew you were helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see the type of people you were helping, I mean, I was just amazed.
Mm-hmm.
And one good thing about an evac hospital is you don't have time to, you know, get fond of somebody or, you know, make a close relationship with any patient because they're going to be gone.
Right.
That's the purpose of an evac.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of contradictory to nursing in general? I mean, in nursing generally, are you supposed to sort of develop a relationship with patients? Was that a problem, or do you think it was a, you know, a benefit of the war that you didn't really get close to people?
I think it was a benefit for the nurses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the GIs were so thankful. Didn't matter who you were.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so rewarding.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Was it a problem for you that once they left, you never really found out what happened to them, or you know, if they recovered or how they were doing? Was that a problem or kind of disheartening or?
Well, there was one that I was concerned about that had come in twice. He was in the 101st Airborne Division.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from near my hometown.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we found this out by chatting. And the second time he came in, he asked for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talked to him again. And then he came back a third time and he got killed. He's on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a big, made the cover of Life magazine.
Uh-huh.
It shows him with a dressing on his head the second time he got one.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. And, say, after you did your years in recruiting, then you went and got your BSN?
Yes.
And did you get to pick your school, or did they give you a list of choices? Or?
Well, I had to be accepted into school, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was allowed to go anywhere I wanted.
Uh-huh. And where did you choose to go?
East Carolina.
Uh-huh. And
the reason I chose that was one of my fellow recruiting counselors that was on the year before me, one of my competition, she went there, and I kept in touch with her, and she really enjoyed it. The dean of the school was a retired Army nurse. She said, you'll love it down here. It was close enough for me to sit down with my family and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied it.
Uh-huh. Hmm. And did you like it?
I did.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I was a 35-year-old student.
Uh-huh. And that was a co-ed program then?
No, it's 2029.
Uh-huh. And was that different than your initial nurse training in the diploma program? And did you find that it was a lot different, or did you like it or not like it? Or
I had a friend in Philadelphia who was an LPN, a male.
Mm-hmm.
And he would always go to these nursing schools to get his degree.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always saying, he couldn't hold his tongue to some of the instructors.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he knew more than they did. And a lot of times the instructors were wrong, but he had to pipe up.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't learn from it, but he told me if I ever do it, he said, if they say a dog is a cat, it's a dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went with the flow, and I got along fine.
Uh-huh. Did
I
you?
Danny's in a lot of things, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, from my experience, but I just went with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy it.
Uh-huh. Did you feel like you, you know, having so many years of nursing already, that that sort of gave you a better ground, or did you find that your nursing school was easier than it would have been years before, or I mean, did you kind of already know some of the stuff they were teaching you?
Yeah.
And was nursing education different then than it was you know, when you first went to nursing school?
Yes. I mean, back in the late 50s, early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot different.
Uh-huh.
We only had a handful of meds to learn.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have to worry about any lab work other than how to fill out the lab. In other words, we didn't have to, they didn't teach us to interpret results.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to start IVs.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you had done routinely in Vietnam, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what was that like when you come back and they say, well, you can't do that? Nurses don't do that. Was that?
Well, eventually we were, though.
Uh-huh.
In Vietnam, everybody got one.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't do it, who was going to do it?
Right. And so you finished up your BSN, and then what did you do in the military?
I finished up my BSN, and I went with evening night supervisor at a medical center in San Antonio,
mm-hmm.
awaiting the career course.
Uh-huh.
So I did that for like 4 months, and then I went to the career course.
Uh-huh. And what made you decide to make the military a career by that point?
Oh, I had made it a point earlier.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think I knew when I went in, unless I had a bad experience, it was going to be my career.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I never had what I considered a bad experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you like San Antonio?
I didn't like the weather there, but yeah.
It's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's muggy.
Mm-hmm.
It gets hot here, but I can tolerate it here a lot better.
Uh-huh. And how long was the career course?
The career course was 6 months.
6 months, uh-huh. And then where were you assigned after that?
I went to Fort Meade as assistant chief nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And from Fort Meade, I went to Japan for 3 years as chief nurse clinic.
Uh-huh.
And I came back as chief nurse at Fort Monmouth again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Denver.
Uh-huh.
To the medical center there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was evening night supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Hawaii and retired.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But that trip to Hawaii wasn't as fun, he said before.
No, I got real sick, really depressed. I had gotten divorced and remarried, and some things happened with my ex-wife. I got to Hawaii and I felt trapped.
Mm-hmm.
It was an island. And I was just very, very stressed. I ended up with electric shock treatments and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened. One good thing happened with the electric shock. When I was in Vietnam and when I came back, about once a month, once every 3 weeks, I'd have this dream about a Viet Cong pitching a grenade into our tent.
Mm-hmm.
go off and I'd wake up.
Uh-huh.
And I'd have it like every 3 weeks or every month.
Uh-huh.
For, I don't know, 10, 12 years.
Wow.
And when I had my, then I had my electric shock, I've never had it since.
Huh. Wow. Did you ever have other problems with nightmares or
none.
Any
no.
of that? Uh-huh.
No, just that recurring dream all the time.
Huh. And the, you said you remarried in Hawaii, and is this the wife that I've talked to through email?
Yeah.
And she's in the Army Nurse Corps as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got a whole family in the Army Nurse Corps.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Huh. Yeah, I was married 20, 25 years to my first time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I've been married 17 years.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Huh. And have you retired then from the military now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What year did you retire?
89.
89. Okay. And have you stayed in nursing since then, or have you done other things?
I have a couple years in at Fort Hood. I worked as supervisor at the great hospital there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a second. I got to put one of my dogs out.
Okay.
I'll be back in a second.
Mm-hmm. And so what have you done since retirement then?
Well, I take care of the house.
Uh-huh.
I do all the shopping.
Mm-hmm.
My wife has cooked me 4 meals in 20 years. So I do the cooking. I love to cook.
Uh-huh.
I go to cooking classes. I bowl a couple days a week.
Uh-huh.
And I got 3 dogs that take a lot of my time, or I give them a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I do foster care.
Mm-hmm.
My wife works very long hours, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
But when she has a couple of days off, we always do something.
Uh-huh.
We like to travel. We like to go to Vegas. We like to go to different places, like New Mexico, and check out different towns.
Uh-huh.
Stay overnight.
Uh-huh.
So she works hard, but she parties hard when she's off.
Uh-huh. Huh. What was your favorite assignment?
I think Denver.
Denver, uh-huh.
It was towards the end of my career, but I liked that because I liked my job. I think evening night supervisor is the best job you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because everyone's gone for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You make rounds. You get to spend time with the staff. You get to spend time with the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to make all the decisions.
Uh-huh.
But you really do get to spend a lot of time with the nurses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a 9-hour shift.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have any, other than doing some evaluations. Some of the staff that work with you, and occasionally you have to go to some mandatory classes.
Uh-huh.
You do 8.5-9 hours, you're done.
Yeah.
Now you have no, my wife works at least 15 hours a day.
Wow.
Every day.
Wow.
Every day.
Hmm.
On the weekends, if we don't go somewhere, she's on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
She's at home, but she's working.
Uh-huh.
Well, she's a overachiever.
Huh. Hmm. Wow. And have you seen the nurses or the Women's Memorial in D.C. by the wall?
I have.
You have?
Our hospital in Vietnam had a reunion the day it was dedicated.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we were there the day it was dedicated.
Uh-huh. And what did you think of it?
Oh, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter and son-in-law and two of my granddaughters came down.
Mm-hmm.
They live just to the north of D.C. And my granddaughter went back and wrote a, did a drawing. And she had the flag in it, the memorial. She had the vice president who was there to speak. The people in the crowd. I mean, it was amazing what she remembered of it. And I think at that time she was only about 5 years old. So yeah, I was there for the dedication.
And did your hospital get together very often? Do they have reunions still?
They had one other one, and they're planning on another one. I think the next one they're going to have in Vegas. So they know I'll come. So we're only an hour and 15 minutes away by plane.
And do you read much that's been written by nurses?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I read, my favorite reading is true crime cases. Ann Rule. That's my favorite thing. I don't read, the only time I read is when I go to bed.
And you said that your year in Vietnam was one of the most rewarding years you've had?
Absolutely.
In the Army?
Absolutely. For me. I always wanted to go back. But I knew if I put in for it, my wife would never forgive me. But I would have, liked to have gone back. I might not have liked it so much the second time. I think I liked it so much when I went was because we started from scratch. You know? Like I said, every time something will get better. I mean, I sponsored a guy when I was in Hawaii that came back from Vietnam, and I went to the airport to pick him up. I don't know if you're familiar with the sponsor program or not.
I've heard of it, but not a lot about it.
When you're going from one post to another, they assign you someone, one of your peers, that writes to you, and they check on housing and schools and different things or what you might need when you come in. So anyway, when I went out to meet him, I said, how was Vietnam? And he said, he said it was horrible. He said, one of our air conditioners didn't work all the time, and our stereo, we had trouble with our stereo, and I thought, you son of a bitch. The only air conditioning we had in Vietnam was in pre-op in the ORs, and the orthopedic ward, and intensive care. None of the wards had them. None of the tents had them.
Well, was there anything that we didn't talk about that you thought we might? Or did you wanted to mention?
I guess the main thing was that we didn't have the equipment and stuff that we have now. Females worked well. The males, a couple of them were anesthesia, but the rest of them worked on the wards. There was no difference as far as the type of work that we would do. I think maybe one of the females might call one of us and ask us if we put a Foley in somebody or something like that. But other than that.
Everybody did the same job.
Yeah, we did. We didn't have the greatest leaders in the world, but the section chiefs were pretty good.
Great. Well, I really appreciate it. If you think of, if you think of other things you want to add or something, just let me know, and that we can do that. That's fine. And if I think of other questions, too, I may give you another call back.
Yeah, I'm here most of the time.
Okay, well, we'll end this for right now.